Audra Ames found the love of her life, Air Force pilot Scott Ames. Soon after their beautiful wedding, Scott's military plane crashed during practice, leaving Audra a widow. The devastating loss of her husband at such a young age gave her a choice. Does she pick up and fight or stay stuck in the pain? Audra has been a spokesperson for military widow wives around the nation and spends countless moments sharing Scott's memory with the world. This year, she took a personal leap and ran for Miss Indiana as the Westfield representative. She continues to share Scott's legacy, celebrate their love, and empower others to fight through the pain for all God has in store for them. Hi friends, you've made it to Karina Faith Diaries, your new go-to spot for real talk about the journeys that shape our faith. I'm Karina, your host, and I'm super excited to chat about real life struggles, wins, and everything in between. This is all about honest conversations, lifting each other up, and the power of a relationship with Jesus. Whether you're here to learn, connect, or to get inspired, let's get started together. I just want to ask you all that are watching this to please subscribe, share this podcast with people. I don't know what God has in store for all of us. So we are just trying to do our best in here and starting this ministry from zero. So leaving your thumbs up, subscribing to the channel, spreading the word would greatly help us and tell the stories of this wonderful guest that we're having here. So let's do this. Welcome to the podcast, Audra. I'm so glad that you're here. Thank you.
Me too.
Audra, tell us a little bit before you. I mean, you have such a powerful story, but who is Audra? Like, who are you before Scott and everything?
Yeah, so I grew up in a small farm town in central Illinois called Leroy. There's 3,500 people. My graduating high school class was 55. So I had the really beautiful childhood of quite literally growing up with the same people from kindergarten through 12th grade, which was awesome. Wonderful. I have some phenomenal parents, a younger sister who's 2 years younger than me. And I kind of knew, I'm a financial planner, and I knew I wanted to do that my entire life, basically.
Wow.
Which is kind of crazy. Yeah, my senior year of high school, I was like, yeah, I want to go study finance. And so I made my way to Indiana State in Terre Haute. And then that's where I met Scott my senior year, my very last semester of college.
Wow. So then he decided to go to the military after college?
Yeah. So he knew he wanted to be an Air Force pilot as well from when he was like 13 years old.
Wow.
And so he knew when he went to ISU, he did ROTC there, got his pilot slot. And so when we met, I already had my job here in Indianapolis.
Okay.
And then Scott had already commissioned to be an Air Force pilot. So he knew he was going to go to Mississippi. I was going to Indianapolis, and we very quickly were like, well, are we going to do long distance and be serious or not?
Yeah. And so were you? Like, did you get married right off the bat? Or
no, we didn't. So we did 2 years of long distance. I was studying for my CFP, which is the Certified Financial Planner designation. He was training to be a pilot. So they start in the T-6, which is a prop airplane. And then after the T-6, you either fly a heavy aircraft, which is like the refueling aircraft, like KC-135s, C-130s, or you go fly fighter jets, which is what Scott wanted to do. So he then flew the T-38, which is a plane that he was in when he crashed. He was an instructor. But yeah, so we did long distance for 2 years. He proposed after a year and a half.
Oh.
And then after 6 months of not seeing each other, we eloped at the courthouse in Mississippi.
Oh, wow. So you just took a trip there? Let's do this?
Yeah, like a week after he got to Mississippi, we looked at each other and he was like, you want to go get married? And I was like, yeah. So we just went to the courthouse.
On
a Friday, we talked about it. I messaged this woman on Facebook and I was like, any chance you can take photos on Monday? And she's like, yeah, I'll be there.
So these are the photos of your wedding here, basically.
So like those that was from our ceremony, which was actually 4 years ago yesterday. But then the ones of our wedding or like our courthouse wedding are on social media too. But yeah.
Oh, wow.
I wore a bridal rehearsal dress that I never got to wear because of COVID. And I was like, well, I have a white dress, so let's just go.
So this whole thing was in 2020.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That you were doing long distance and getting married at the courthouse.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. I didn't realize that. What a year. What a year for so many people.
I know. Yeah.
So then, okay. So you guys eloped. Then you got back here to do your job and he stayed there.
So no, I moved down to Mississippi. I actually did my job remotely from Mississippi. They let me move, which was awesome. Yeah. And candidly, COVID helped, I guess,
so much
in a sense. Unfortunately, absolutely. I'll never say it was good, but everyone was working remotely, and so it certainly became easier for me to work remotely mm-hmm. because everyone was doing it, and they're like, "Well, we trust that you can handle it because we're all doing it now."
Yeah.
Because at the time, we didn't know if I was going to be able to, you know, kind of continue working there. So, COVID allowed me to do that.
That's awesome. I feel like I always see the good in every situation, and that's definitely something good. That's like we've carried on now. Yep. Like lots of people can spend more time with their families and everything because of that. So that's great. Walk us through your life together and kind of like plans for the future and everything and how the accident happened.
I guess I'll backtrack. So when we met in February of, was 18, we had 2 months together at school. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we do long distance. So we're long distance from June of 2018 through June of 2020. We were long distance for about 2 years, mm-hmm. Almost exactly. So we'd see each other every like 1 month, maybe 2 months at a time. We'd meet up halfway. And so we'd kind of gotten pretty used to just not seeing each other.
Yeah.
That was kind of our normal. So then when we got married after he came back, so Scott had been in Texas doing trainings and then had met me in Mississippi. And it was like literally kind of the honeymoon phase, right?
Yes.
It's like we were finally getting to live with each other. It was the first time we'd lived with each other in a home mm-hmm. And just kind of getting used to like actually, like it was kind of weird at first. Like the first week, we both were like, this is really weird.
Waking up and seeing you first thing in the morning.
It's like, oh, I get to see you for a week in a row. Like, this is weird.
Wow.
I'm like, yeah, just getting to like, we kind of just felt like kids kind of. It was just so fun getting to hang out all the time. And so we did that for 8 months and he would work. He loved flying. And so he would be gone for 12-hour days sometimes. He did fly a lot on the weekends doing cross countries, which is what he was doing the day that he died.
Mm-hmm.
But students loved him. Okay. His colleagues loved him. He was the person that, you know, everyone describes someone who's died, I think, as the light of the room, but mm-hmm. Scott truly was. He made every single person feel like his best friend, myself included.
Wow.
Like anytime he met anyone or was around anyone, like you, he was present with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew that he cared about what you were saying and you as a person. And so I had that for 8 months and it was awesome.
So
you know?
Special.
Yeah. And we didn't really want kids for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't really, you know, it was a future plan. And that's always hard, you know, in grief to not have had that opportunity with him.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I think life was just, we were kind of living in a fairy tale for sure.
Wow.
Up until the day he died.
Were you brought up in a Christian home? Was he a Christian? Like at that time, were you guys, what was your relationship with God? Did you have any?
I did. Scott was certainly on the skeptical side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he believed that there was a God, but he had a lot of, he was a very scientific, analytical
mm-hmm.
person. I think most pilots and military people are.
Yes.
And so he was certainly kind of exploring his faith when he died, but I was a Christian.
Okay.
And I do at some point, I don't know if you want me to tell you the story today, but I actually have a dream that like kind of reassures me that Scott was in heaven. And so that's something that I feel like God gave me that was a really special.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it was a really special thing.
Because I was going to ask, and this is such a tough thing to say because, you know, people who are not believers, it's so hard for us who stay and who are, you know, to... But I believe, I don't know, I have conviction. Well, I don't know if I should say conviction, but I do believe that everybody's going to be given a chance. You know, you can just, God is a good God, you know. So I love that he gave you that, you know, gift of that certainty, you know.
Yeah.
So what happened? Describe like the day of the accident.
Yeah. So the day that Scott died, February 19th, 2021, it actually had snowed that week in Mississippi.
Mm.
And in hindsight, this is one of those moments that I think back on and like God knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
God knew what was going to happen that Friday. We didn't. And so I got a full week at home with my husband, which is something I never got to do. Like, wow. He was always gone. I was working. My week was slow that week, so I only worked like half days. And we spent the week cuddling on the couch, watching movies, playing in the snow, playing with our dog. And it was a beautiful week leading up to that day. And so he went in that day, and he was flying with a Japanese student named Rinchi. Who was also very similar to Scott. Like, everyone loved him. He worked really hard. Mm. He had not seen his family in 2 years because he was training here from Japan. Wow. But Scott was his favorite instructor. So he had asked Scott to fly with him that weekend. And they were going to fly from Columbus, Mississippi to Tallahassee, Florida. Mm-hmm. So that morning, Scott wakes up and he got to sleep in. And he wakes up. I'd worked for probably an hour. And he was like, hey, can you help me pack my bag? Mm-hmm. So I helped him pack his duffel bag. And like, I vividly remember him being like, should I pack these swim trunks or these? Or do you think mm-hmm. I should pack jeans? Is it going to be cold? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm candidly jealous you're going to the beach. I'm stuck here in the snow and you're going to the beach. Like, that's unfair. Yeah. So I helped him pack his duffel bag. And he had this belt with this Budweiser belt buckle on it. Mm-hmm. And he was so funny that, like, he would be mad that I was not wearing a belt right now because he believed if you had belt buckles or belt loops, you had to wear a belt. Yeah. And he, for some reason, did not remember his belt that day. And it remained on our floor for months after he died, but he forgot it. But I vividly remember, like, helping him pack his bag. And before he was flying that day, he had a test. Mm-hmm. So every so often, they would test the pilots to make sure that they were up to speed on different data about the airplane. So like, hey, if this happens, what do you do? And kind of emergency procedures and things. Mm-hmm. And so I quizzed him on all of these different data points about his airplane. He got everything correct.
Wow.
And he passed that exam earlier that day as well. But just really cherished the last moments I had with him.
Yeah.
And then he went to leave. And before he left, he hugged me in this spot of our kitchen. And that comes into play because in the dream, it was where I saw him in my dream as well. But I hugged him. And I don't remember what it was about this day, but I was just really sad. I didn't want him to leave.
Mm.
And I don't know if it's like one of those God premonition things or if it was just me being selfish because he'd been home all week and I didn't want him to leave for the weekend. But I just remember being really sad that he was leaving. Wow. And so I hugged him really, really tight. And I told him, I love you so, so, so much.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I love you so, so, so much more. And he kissed me and I watched him get in his truck and put his duffel bag in his truck and back out of the driveway. And I literally started bawling because I was so sad. I didn't want him to leave. And that was the last time that I would ever see him.
Yeah.
And he called me about 11:30 that day. And he said, hey, babe, I'm going to be home. We're actually not going to fly till tomorrow morning. And I remember being so happy because I was like, yes, like I get to see him tonight. And he texted me at about 2:00 and he said, hey, we're actually going to take off today. I'll FaceTime you when I land. And I said, okay, please fly so safe. I love you so much.
Mm.
And I didn't hear from him ever again.
I'm sorry, first of all. So, okay. So then you don't hear from him. Did you start obviously getting worried? How did you get the news?
I tell people that when people tell you, like, I knew something was wrong, like, mm-hmm. I really did have that gut feeling. He left at about 2:30 to 3:00 that day, and I was very anxious that day, and mm-hmm. I didn't know why. I was kind of always anxious when he flew. I prayed every day that he would get home safe, and I just could not shake that feeling that day of just mm-hmm. anxiousness. And he died at 5:19 p.m. At 5:30, I remember checking his location on my phone. And I was like, that's weird. He was in Montgomery, Alabama. And I thought, I didn't know he was stopping there. So I'm like, well, maybe he had an emergency and they had to land in Alabama. It seemed really out of the way for Tallahassee, Florida from Columbus. So I was just very confused. And I had kind of the feeling I have now where, like, my heart is racing, right? Like, I just mm-hmm. kind of had that very anxious, like, something doesn't feel right. But I convinced myself it was fine mm-hmm. because I was like, well, he's a safe pilot. He knows what he's doing.
Yes.
If something were wrong, like, his phone wouldn't be connecting to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Like it wouldn't connect. So, like, he's got to be fine. And so I kind of distract myself for a few hours and I texted him and I was like, hey, like, are you okay? No response. It was delivered. So I was like, again, like, I thought if he ever were in a plane crash, like, Yes. He's not going to get a text from me, right?
Did that cross your mind ever?
It did. Okay. Oh, yeah, it did. And it certainly did that day because I was like, man, like, that's weird. Like, he should have landed by now. But I was like, well, if he had an emergency, like, maybe they popped a tire or they lost an engine or, like, he's probably just dealing with that there. Like, I'm just going to try not to worry about it. Mm-hmm. But again, like, his message delivered. So I was like, he's probably fine. Like, he's just busy. And I distract myself. And probably about, like, seven maybe, I checked again because I'm like, this is like, I still haven't heard from him. And I'm like he should be somewhere by now. Like I should hear from him. And so I checked his location and it hadn't moved and it had refreshed in the same spot it was 2 hours prior.
Wow. That's strange.
Yeah. And I thought to myself, like, I knew immediately something was wrong. Like I had that, like that instant panic and I was like, something's not okay. And I texted him and I was like, Scott, are you okay? And just like nothing. And I started calling him over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And it just kept going to voicemail. And I had thought to myself, like, I had remembered this moment where he was like, if something ever happened to me, like, I wouldn't want you to have my location because you'd know. And I heard him kind of say that in my head. And I was like, something's really wrong. Like, something's really wrong. And I had turned on the news and on the bottom of the TV said T-38 crash in Montgomery, Alabama.
Oh, my God.
Two pilots are dead. And I was like, no.
That's how we found out?
And I said, no, it's not him. It's not him. And I was praying. I was screaming. I was like, no, like, this can't. And I was calling him. I kept calling him.
Oh, my gosh.
And he wasn't answering. And I looked up on my phone, like, what had happened. And the accident was where his phone was. And wow. I don't know how much time passed between then. And when the Air Force knocked on my door, but at some point, my dog Miles barked at the back door, and I was like, I can't. Mm-hmm. Like, I know what's happening, and I cannot go to the door. And when I opened it, his commander was standing there crying, and all he said was, I'm so sorry. And I really couldn't tell you what happened after that, because I don't remember.
Yeah. Wow. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry for everything. Like, the way that you have learned about this, that's really tough. Is that the usual, like, protocol? Do you know, like, if they, I mean, how many, it seemed like it was hours after. I would assume that you would have been the first one to know, right?
Yeah, I believe I was. The reason it was on the news was because it was at a public airport. So in Montgomery, they have, like, an Air Force Reserve squadron there, but it wasn't at that runway or that area. It happened at a public airport. And so whenever I think there was electrical linemen that were working under the accident site, they were the ones that had called 911 and things. And so it just was a very public thing, unfortunately. But, you know, I really don't know candidly what protocols are. I think it's probably different for every accident and every base, but I know that they had to, like, they had to verify that it was make sure that plane. They had to verify who was in the plane. They had to verify, like, flight path and plans and, like, I mean, I don't know where the commander was, right? He could have been at a movie. He could have been at dinner with his family.
Yes, that's true.
And so, of course, he had to go, like, get in his dress blues and,
there's a whole a whole thing. So do you know what happened? Like, was it just can you share?
Yeah, I'm fine sharing. They were landing when they crashed. They were yards from the runway.
Wow.
And that's always been something that's really hard to reconcile for me, because I think in my head I'm like, you are so close.
Yes. And he was trying to land. Something was probably wrong, and he was
You know, it's their accident was really, people refer to it as like the Swiss cheese effect, right? Where it was just like there were so many things that went wrong at the worst possible times. I mean, you can look up the accident report online. It's a public report. And Scott's ultimately who they blame, because he was the instructor and it was his aircraft.
Oh, wow.
So that's really hard to reconcile too, because I know that he did everything he could.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, him and the student were landing, and they idled the aircraft, and so they were descending just very quickly. I don't think Scott knew that they idled. The student certainly didn't mean to do that, and I don't ever place blame on him. He did the best he could, and Scott did the best he could as well. But they, as they were descending onto the runway, they hit a tower, and it pulled them into the wooded area next to the runway.
Wow. Okay, so in that moment, you learn about this. The world goes crazy, like you're just out of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, when did you find peace with this? Or like, did it take a while? Or were you, because you are Christian, did you instantly know that, I mean, God's plan or whatever? How did you like navigate this next few days?
Yeah, I have a little hurt. I think Christians try to mean well. Mm-hmm. But I heard a lot of like, oh, well, at least he's in heaven and at least he wasn't in pain and he didn't know he was going to die. And
just not validating your pain.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And just a lot of like, oh, well, he's in heaven now and, you know, like God needed him. And I'm like, you know, like that sucks.
Yes. Like, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't think God needed him. Like, I'm sorry, but like, yeah. I feel like I needed him more than God did. No offense. Yes. I didn't feel peace for a long time. I was very angry for a long time, probably at least a year. And about a year after he died, there was a Christian widow friend who runs Never Alone Widows, which is a retreat for any woman, not just military or moms or anything. And they did a retreat almost a year to the day that Scott died. And I was like, all right, a Christian widow retreat, like that's probably where I should go.
Yeah.
So I go, and there was just so much goodness that weekend. And I remember being surrounded by, I think it was either 250 or 300 other widows who had, their husbands had died of just wildly different things than mine had, different ages. There were other young widows like me. There were women who'd been widowed at 50, 40, 60. And I just remember leaving, and this conference was in Atlanta, Georgia. And I remember leaving and I was like, God, like, I don't even know what to do with this information, because I'm like, you kind of feel, I remember feeling very, like, I don't want to say like my grief was less than other people's, but I remember hearing stories of ways that other women were widowed. And I'm like, wow, like, I can't imagine that. Or like, I can't imagine having gone through that and having children. And like, I remember not invalidating my grief, but just being like, man, like I'm so little in all of this. Right. And like, I am certainly not alone and what I'm going through. And obviously just hearing a ton of stories of women who'd been widowed and were now remarried and God had redeemed their story and they had children and like just so much goodness. And I was praying on my way home, and Scott's favorite song was Alan Jackson's Chattahoochee. And the Chattahoochee runs through Atlanta. And on my way home from Atlanta, I'm driving over this river. And I'm like, I need to stop and pray for a second. So I stop and I pray, and I vividly like heard Scott in my head be like, you cannot end your life, meaning like just be sad all the time, because I've died. Mm-hmm. Like, you cannot spend the rest of your life sad and crying, like, because I died. Like, you can't do that. Like, you, like, the way that you're going to honor me is by living the way that I lived my life. And I'm like, okay. So I'm just like kind of sitting there, and I'm obviously like bawling, because I'm like, what is happening? And I'm like, but that seems so disingenuous, right? Like, why should I be living my life with joy? Why should I be like living every day like my last, like you, and smiling? And like, that feels bad. Like, I, like, that feels like I'm showing people that I don't love you if I'm like being happy. And I just like had that kind of peace in my heart that was like, no, like the way that you honor Scott is by living the way that he did and sharing him with the world. And so like, I really can't explain it, but kind of from that moment on, I was like, all right, like, it's okay to be happy. It's okay to be thankful for God's blessings in my life. It's okay to be grateful for the 3 years I had with Scott and be angry that I didn't get more, but still be so grateful for the time that I did have. And instead of being mad about that for the rest of my life, be like, I'm never going to understand why this happened to me, probably until I get to heaven and God's like, this is why? The result of this, you know, because my brain can't comprehend that, because it's not okay.
No, it's not.
And it does hurt, and it's heartbreaking, and it's sad. Yeah. And there are things like that happen all the time that they shouldn't happen. But we live on earth. We're not in heaven yet. And they do. And So yeah, I think from that moment, I had that piece of like, I have to change my purpose mm-hmm. through this experience.
I just love that it took you going somewhere. So you had to, you know, just if we stay in our grief, it's so hard to get out of it mm-hmm. and not be in relationship with mm-hmm. other people. So God called us to be in relationship, and that's why it's so important, you know. So in seeing other people's problems too, we do seem small, and it's mm-hmm. not validating. I mean, what we feel is real and it's painful, whatever it is, but just looking at our neighbors, sometimes it's like what people go through. It's no joke. Everybody's mm-hmm. going through their own personal battles and their own personal pains. And just looking at that and being able to be there for them, it helps us to forget a little bit about ours or just make it like, you know, yeah, we can all make it together. And so I one thing that I wanted to take away from your story is like, don't stay in your pain. Right? Like just go and be in relationship and do something. So this lady invited you to go to this retreat?
She did. Yeah. Yes. So it's, I feel like there's just a lot in my grief story. I feel like there's just a lot of really wild, like God connections and God moments. Mm-hmm. After Scott died, the Air Force assigned us a liaison and his mm-hmm. name was Pip. And he was essentially our person who was telling me everything that was going to happen. So he said, all right, these people are going to come to your house this day and they're going to talk to you about this thing and they're going to make you sign these forms. And then this is how planning Scott's funeral is going to go. And this is what the Air Force will do for the funeral. And this is your options. Mm-hmm. And this is the memorial that we're going to have this day. And so they assigned someone. And so Pip had known this woman's late husband, who had also died in AT-38 at Columbus Air Force Base years prior.
Wow.
And so he had connected me with her within, I think, 2 weeks of Scott dying. And he said, hey, I have no idea if you even want to talk to her. Mm-hmm. But she was also widowed in a T-38. She'd actually been widowed twice. It is insane.
Oh my gosh.
In her 20s. Yeah, she's incredible. And wow. She is probably one of the most faithful people I've ever met. She's remarried now. Anyways, so she, I remember
we
reaching
need to
out
have
to her
here too, right?
Yes, I will connect you with her.
Wow.
Yes. But she started this Never Alone Widows. And so she had said, hey, like we're doing this conference. I don't know if you're going to feel ready to do that, but like, mm-hmm. we'd love for you to come. And I think it would be really awesome for you. But yeah, so just a crazy, it's like a connection. Crazy connection.
Well,
point.
God's, mm-hmm. God yep. sent, right?
Yep.
So you help, yes. Reach women that are struggling, yes. being widows too.
Yeah. So it's honestly kind of another crazy thing is like, there are actually a lot more young military widows than you'd think.
I was going to ask this, like, how common is this? I never thought it was.
Yeah. So statistically speaking, the average age of a widow is 57.
Okay.
In the Air Force, though, the average age of a widow is like 25. So was theoretically the statistic of a military widow. Most military widows are very young. And I'm probably connected to, I mean, at this point, over 30 young widows.
Wow.
When Scott died, it was a blessing in the sense that I didn't really have to find the community of military widows. They are a strong group of women, and I hate the reason I know them, but I'm grateful to know them.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of gathered and basically were like, hey, there's a group of us here. And if you want to talk to us, we're here. If not, we're just going to leave you alone. And I was like, I literally don't know what reality is right now. So like, I would love to talk to you because
I don't even know.
Yeah. Like, I don't even know what's happening. I don't know if these things I'm experiencing, like if I'm okay to be angry at them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if these are normal. Like this seems like this really pisses me off. Like
Yes. There's
just a lot of things that you're going through. Like for example, the military came to my house. Scott died Friday night on Sunday, and it's protocol. They have to do it. But it's like they came to my house and needed a full week history of everything Scott ate, if he was stressed, if we were arguing, if he did strenuous activity, if he drank alcohol, if he ate good food, if he slept well. I mean, like they needed like this whole history to try to help them figure out what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I got it, but I'm like, I am so mad that you're asking me this right now.
You're in so much pain.
And yeah. And like, first of all, I don't know what I had yesterday. Like,
yes.
I'm like trying to figure this out is impossible for me mm-hmm. right now. But being able to connect with those women and be like, that sucked. And they're like, oh yeah. Like, and they're going to do this too. So be prepared for that. And I'm like, okay, good to know.
Wow.
So unfortunately there've been a lot of other women that have been widowed. And so kind of one of our friends, Sonia, she is kind of the leader of our unofficial group. And so whenever someone is widowed, she always kind of reaches out to them and says, hi, my name is Sonia. There's a group of us that would love to connect with you. If you want us all to follow you, we will. If not, we'll leave you alone. But yeah, there's probably 30 something of us at least that are kind of all connected across different Air Force branches as well, or military branches. So there's like Air Force widows, Navy widows, Marine widows.
And this is nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are they Christian women or don't necessarily have a label? It's just like a community of helping.
Yeah. Yes. They don't necessarily have to be Christian. You know, I think we certainly have a base of us that are.
Yes.
But, you know, I think grief can be really messy. Yes. And there's a lot of anger and a lot of questions.
Absolutely.
And I think it can be hard with
make your grief. Doubt. Yes. Mm-hmm. And upset, which is so understandable. So let's backtrack a little bit about what you said. How you felt that it was a little unthoughtful of the way the Christians approached you. What would have been something, I mean, give us some advice, because I honestly wouldn't know what to say either. What can we say in a time like this?
I'll preface my answer by saying that, like, I still don't know what to say sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I've been through it. You know, I think every person is very different in the mm-hmm. way that they're grieving. I did not want to hear the everything's going to be okay and everything happens for a reason and he's in heaven now. Like that really,
like
really,
the minimizing the situation. Yeah,
those,
right?
Those platitudes made me really upset.
Yes.
and I knew then that people were coming from a place of love and they were coming from a place of like, that is truth, right? Like God has a reason for everything, whether we know it on this side of heaven or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I needed to get to that point on my own. Like I needed to get to that point in my healing journey to be like, all right, like let's read the book of Job 18 times and figure out how I feel about this. But people telling me that was not helpful, or like, yeah, everything happens for a reason. It's like, okay, well, this really sucks. And I don't think there's there's not a reason behind this. I still feel that way. I'm like, there's not a reason this guy died. Like he shouldn't have, right? Like it's not okay. Mm-hmm. So for me, those platitudes were really empty, even though I knew they came from a good place. So I always try to tell people, like, don't, as hard as it is, and even though you know you're coming at it from a place of kindness, just do your best to eliminate those from your language. I would always try to preface it by saying, how are you feeling in this moment? Mm-hmm. How are you feeling today? Saying, oh, like, how are you feeling? They're not feeling great, right? Like overall, they're not having a good time. Like they're heartbroken. Their world has been turned upside down. So like, don't ask them that general of a question.
Yes.
And do what you can do that you're good at. So don't, like, if you aren't good at cooking, don't offer to make a casserole.
No, thanks.
Yeah. But if you like to fold laundry, just be like, I'm going to come over and I'm going to do your laundry.
I love that.
If that woman has children, be like, I'm going to come over and I'm going to watch your children for you. So you can just sit and be, I'll take them out of your house. Just
take them for a walk.
Yeah. Just whatever it is that you're passionate about and you're good at. If you like to clean, just be like, I'm coming over and I'm going to clean. What was always hard for me was everyone would say, hey, like, let me know what I can do.
We talked about this.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know. Yes.
And we're never going to ask for help, right?
No, because we hate asking for help. Yes. And so, like, people ask me that or told me that all the time. And I'm like, well, I probably could use my house cleaned, but, like, I'm not going to ask you to clean my house.
Yes.
Or, like, I could use food, but, like, I'm not going to ask you to come cook for me or, like, pay to bring me something.
Yes.
Because, like, that just feels bad, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think there's certainly a portion of us that we're self-sufficient, right? So we don't want to be like, hey, please feel sorry for me and bring me Chick-fil-A. Like, we don't want to ask people to do that.
No.
So I always just say offer what you can do and what you're good at, because you're going to feel better doing that and you're going to help them in some way, whatever that is.
I agree. So just as a takeaway, I'd say validate the person's feelings. Yes. Like, I understand what I might not understand, but it sucks. Mm-hmm. It's terrible, period. Yeah. Right? We don't need to justify, because it does suck and it's terrible. And I'm so sorry that you went through. So maybe just validating that feeling and not try to justify or minimize. And also, we had Janae Swan here the other day too, and she went through breast cancer, and she said the exact same thing. offering like, hey, I'm here if you need me to, which I'm so guilty of doing this. Like I do that. I'm here. But it is true. It's like, hey, just go and do something, you know, start a meal train, start like a sign people up to go, hey, yes, take the lead on like, let's help, you know, Audra with whatever. I think that's just a great way of doing it. So just some takeaways here, my friends.
Well, and I think being willing to be uncomfortable too.
Yes.
I think we give want
permission
to
grief, right? Yes, and to be angry and upset.
Yeah, like we want to always fix what someone's going through, right? Mm-hmm. So I remember there'd be times where like I wouldn't want to tell people, like if they asked me how I was doing, like I would lie and I'd be like, I'm fine, like I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Even though I might have been doing terrible, because I knew if I told them that I was doing terrible, they were just going to be like, okay, like
I know, right?
Like that's okay, or they wouldn't respond, you know, like I knew that it was going to create a really awkward moment.
Yeah.
And so there was people I knew were safe that I could tell them like I'm having a really crappy day. Mm-hmm. And I knew that they would be able to respond to that, but there was a lot of people that I was just like, I can't tell them how I'm actually doing, because like I know that it's going to be like, or they're going to be like, oh well, everything's going to be okay, and I'm like, no, it's not. Like, it's not going to be okay, don't tell me that. I remember feeling like, and I still feel this way sometimes, like I feel like I just bring awkward wherever I go. Because people are like, oh, like, are you married and do you have kids? And I'm like, well, I was married. And they're like, oh, you're 28. And I'm like, yep.
Yes.
And so I think like there was a time early on in grief where like, I remember like, I don't think I was invited to things because I don't think people knew what to do.
Wow.
Like, I don't think people knew like what to say, or they were like, I don't know if Audra wants to come out today, so I don't know that I'm going to say anything. And there was a phenomenal group of ladies in the squadron, the wives of the squadron, who had a Bible study. And I remember the one saying, I don't know if you're ready for this or want this, but like, we'd love for you to come. And it was probably one of the most healing things I did in my grief. And I am incredibly thankful for them to this day that they invited me to that, because I actually had community. I had people that were willing to be uncomfortable with me and just listen to me complain if I needed to, and then pray for me. In whatever season I was in. And so I think just don't be, I think people can be scared of pain.
Yes.
And grief and trauma. And unfortunately, we all go through it. And so I think just being willing to invite that into your space and be like, hey, they might bring awkward into the room and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, like they may have to complain today and that's okay. Just giving them that space.
That is a great lesson. I just remember one of my best friend's host mother, we all came here as au pairs, and she lost her son in a crazy shooting in San Francisco too. He was literally sitting down eating a hot dog, and it was a crossfire caught him. So this woman's like in shambles, right? As she should. And I told this friend of mine, I'm like, I'm not going to text her because I don't even know what to say. And she did say, and so like a week went by and she said, you know, she's really hurt that people are not reaching out because they just don't know what to say. Just text and say something, you know? And I never thought that would be the case, but it is. You just feel so like, you know, just having people who are willing to say, even if what they're saying is wrong, you know, it's just like, hey, thank you for acknowledging that I'm going through something tough, right?
No, absolutely. And like, I remember there were certainly people that didn't, they were like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, at least you asked, you know, like, I at least feel seen that you, you know, that you reached out. And even a few weeks ago, I went to an event and with one of my friends, and she texted me after, because at the event they talked a lot about being like the modern woman and being married and being a mom. And I think those sorts of things, I don't really think about them. Like, I just am like my reality is my reality, and I don't really get too triggered by those things anymore. But she texted me after and she said, hey, I just want to let you know that I noticed that we talked a lot about that today. And like, I just want to let you know that like, if that's hard, like I see that. And I was like, wow, I don't think too many people in my life have reached out to me to be like, hey, like I'm recognizing that it might be hard for you to consistently hear about people being wives and moms.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it took me back a little
bit
because I really don't think I'd had too many people that had done that.
Yes.
And I was like, that honestly, like, it made me just feel very seen, and I didn't even realize I needed someone to see me that way.
Yeah.
So just stuff like that, I think just, you know, noticing that for other people is important.
Yeah. It's part of maturing. I'm actually learning, you know, things about putting others first too, and seeing them and acknowledging them before our, because we tend to be so self-centered, especially in this world. You know, it's all about me, me, me. What can I do? What am I going to become? And that's not what life, what God called us, right? Yes. It's about serving others and being there for others. Well, I'm glad you have good friends like that.
Thank you.
So how did this tragedy impact your faith overall?
That's a tough question. That's a deep question. I, of course, for a long time was really mad. Mm-hmm. And I was really mad at God. And I questioned his goodness for a long time. I think it is hard to reconcile Scott dying and God is good and, you know, God does bad things to good people. And like, that's something that you think of. And I just remember my youth pastor from high school reached out to me within a week of Scott dying. And he said, you know, God didn't want Scott to die, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought about that for a long time. But anyways, I'm kind of getting on a rabbit trail. But, you know, I think it's natural to be angry. And you're going to be angry, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you go through something that you shouldn't have to go through. You go through something that, in my case, I'm like, I'm way too young to be going through this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted to be widowed when I was like, well, never. But, you know, like 90, maybe. Yes. Like, or I also used to always joke with Scott that I'm like, you're going to have to die first when we're old. Because, like, I can't handle if you go before me.
Oh, gosh.
Which, here we are. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I just remember being so angry and I would say I was certainly an amateur Christian, I think, when mm-hmm. Scott died. I felt like I was just exploring like truly what it meant to have a relationship with God. And so to go through something like that, it caused a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've learned over the last 3.5 years that we live in a world that is full of sin and free will. And there were decisions the day that Scott died that could have saved him, in my opinion. But that's just me being mm-hmm. being selfish and being like, oh, if he just would not have flown that day, then he would have lived, right? But it's like, that's hindsight. And we don't know that. But like, we know that there's going to be tragedy on earth. And like, we know that there's going to be things that just shouldn't happen, that are not okay, that are painful, because we're not in heaven yet. I had a dream a few months after Scott died, that, by the way, like this is a wild God story. I had this dream a few months after he died because I hate admitting this, but like, I remember being like, I hope he made it to heaven mm-hmm. because he was never baptized. And it's like, you have all these people being like, oh, well, if he was never baptized and he didn't make it to heaven. And I'm like, well, you're wrong.
Gosh.
I'm like, first of all, you're wrong.
What a horrible thing to say to someone.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like, also, he was like the most Christ-like person I'd ever met. Yeah, like he was in heaven. Right. But then you just start hearing these things and you're like, well, how do I know? Like, do I have confirmation that he's in heaven? And mm-hmm. like, I remember being like, God, like, I need to know that he's with you because he is 100% with you. I know he has to be. Like, I need you to like give me confirmation of this. And so I moved back to our home in July of 2021. And I had this dream one night that I walked out into our like kitchen living room area. And I see Scott and he's not like glowing, but like, I don't know. There's a book called After Death. I'm going to have like a total circle here, but it's called Imagine Heaven. The movie's called After Death. And they describe people in heaven as like having this light from within. And that's what Scott looked like in my dream. Like, he wasn't glowing, but he just was like, he was just light. Mm-hmm. And I walked out and it was the last place that I saw him in our home in the kitchen. He was standing there and he was wearing a flannel and jeans and boots and a ball cap. And I was like, oh my God, you're here. You're here. And he said, I'm always here. And I said, like, do you know what happened? Are you in heaven? And he's like, yeah, but like, I don't know like what you mean by, do I know what happened? He's like, I know there was a plane crash, but like, I don't remember it. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you mean? Like, you didn't experience any pain then, like, you're okay. And he's like, no, Audra, like, I was literally flying and then I was here.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, like, what? And I just remember bawling in the dream and he's looking at me distraught. Like, why are you crying? Like, he's so confused. And he's like, Audra, like, be happy. Like, it's beautiful here.
Oh.
And so years go by. This movie After Death comes out mm-hmm. last fall. I go see it. And I took that dream to mean like, Scott's in heaven. He is okay.
Yeah.
And that I also had that dream before I even got his accident report. So I had that dream before I even had any idea if he knew he was crashing or not. Like, he didn't. I know that now, but at the time of that dream, I had no idea. So I just had to use that dream as, like, my source of truth that he was okay and he did not experience any pain, that he didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. And so then in October of that year, I get the accident report, which confirms that, like, he had no idea that they were crashing. So I was like, okay, confirmation there. That's great. Like, he didn't experience pain. He didn't know. So then this last fall, After Death comes out, and I go see it, and these people experience near-death experiences. And so they describe heaven and basically prove that heaven exists with science. And the resounding answer of people in these near-death experiences were that they experienced no pain and that they were on Earth and then they were just there.
Wow.
And the way that they described going to heaven was the exact way that Scott described to me in his dream. And so my faith, I think, really took a turn kind of when that I watched that movie, because I thought to myself, wow, like Scott is for sure in heaven. And like, mm-hmm. God made sure to let me know that. And so I think I honestly have a lot more faith now, knowing that like our life here is really such a blip. Mm-hmm. And like what we do here matters so much. The way we love people, the way that we speak kindness into people, like it matters so much. Mm-hmm. Like my clothes don't matter. My bank account does not matter. My house does not matter. Like the way that you love people matters. And that's what Amen. Mattered to Scott. And like, that's how he lived his life. And so yeah, that's how my faith has changed. Wow.
Okay. So we are approaching the holidays here. I know a lot of people experience loss. The holidays can be a very, very difficult time for them. Do you remember what was your like first holiday without him? What were your feelings? And if you have any advice for people approaching this time?
My first holiday without Scott was his birthday. He died February 19th, 2021, and his birthday was April 8th. So he was 2 months shy of turning 25. And my birthday was May 9th, so I turned immediately 25, which you wouldn't think that birthdays would be difficult, but they were, because I remember being so mad that I was already a year older and he would never be 25. Mm. And I remember being like, this is so unfair. And like, I starkly felt that like I will age forever and he will always be 24. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really hard for me. And then our anniversary was in June. So it was just like kind of back to back, just a lot of these like Scott and I special days. Thanks. And that would have been our first wedding anniversary. So we didn't even get to celebrate 1 year. Wow. And so I was obviously really upset, mm-hmm. That day. And I just think that those sorts of days are not days people typically think of. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe anniversary, but for some reason, birthdays, it just felt like there were like people didn't really acknowledge those. And to me, those were some of the hardest ones. Like they still are. Like I hate celebrating my birthday. I hate it. Because I'm like, I don't like that I'm getting older, right? Mm-hmm. And like, when I see Scott in heaven, is he going to see me as me now? Or is he going to always remember me at 24? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Is he going to be 24 in heaven? Or is he, I don't know. These things we don't have answers to.
Yes.
But then the first Thanksgiving and Christmas, those were really hard as well. Because they're my favorite holidays. Mm-hmm. and Scott, like, we just had a ton of fun memories around Christmas. He hated how early I decorated for Christmas. Even though I decorated like October 30th, right after Halloween. and Scott was like, what are you doing? And it's not even Thanksgiving. And I'm like, I want to decorate for Christmas. And so I just vaguely remember like, I didn't want to decorate. I was like, I don't like, it just feels bad to be celebrating this. And you know, for us, it is very clear that someone is missing at the dinner tables, right? Like it was so clear over Thanksgiving that he wasn't there. And I thankfully had family that, really saw that. And so we had a place setting for Scott over Thanksgiving. We had a photo of him. We had a beer at the table for him. And so it felt to me like he was like, they made space for him to be there.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I think for those that are grieving over the holidays, do whatever it is that feels right to you. If you want to have their flannel on a chair and a photo of them and you want to acknowledge their absence, then do that. If you don't want to celebrate the holidays at all, that's also fine. You know, if you want to just be at home at your home with no Christmas decorations, like that's okay. And, you know, just not letting people try to push you into what you should do. Because I think a lot of times people are like, oh, well, just, you know, decorate, like, you never know. And it's like, I don't want to decorate. Like, yeah, it sucks, you know? Yeah. So I think just doing, like, if you want to take a vacation for the first time, just do it, you know, just, you want to take your kids to Disney, do it. Just whatever it is that you feel like mm-hmm. honors that person and makes them feel seen for you in that holiday. Just doing those things. Or if you don't want to celebrate the holiday at all, that's also fine.
Yes, it is different for everyone. And we just need to honor, right, mm-hmm. that. Let's talk a little about happier times. So this has definitely thrown you for a loop. There's all over the place. But do you feel like your faith, after all, got strengthened from all of this?
Yes, I do. Okay,
which is, I love. So what took you to run for Miss Indiana and, like, in this pageant world? Like, how did the whole thing happen?
So, again, this is, like, one way I've honored Scott after he's died is just saying yes to crazy things that I'm like, this makes no sense. But, like, again, I don't know what my day is, so I'm just going to do the crazy things. So in April of 22, I went skydiving in Hawaii because I was like, Scott wanted to skydive. We didn't get to do it. So I was like, we're going to do it. So then the pageant comes around, and I have always wanted to do what I'm doing right now, which is speaking about my grief journey, my faith, and Scott. Oh. And my friend Tara competed in Miss America back in 2009, and she was like, you should consider doing a pageant because it would be a great way to practice your public speaking, get confident being on a stage, and, like, also just meeting people in Indy that share the same passions as you. And I said, great idea. So when I moved back in November of 22, I was looking at pageant systems. So there's, of course, Miss America, Miss USA are kind of the two main ones. Mm. And I couldn't do both because I was widowed and I was going to be too old. And I'm like, well, that seems like God's just telling me no. But I vividly told her on the phone one day, I said, but it seems impossible to me, but if God wants it to happen, he'll make it happen. Mm-hmm. In September of last year, Miss USA came out and got rid of all of their requirements. So they said, you can be widowed, married, be a mom, be whatever age, and compete in our pageant system.
Wow.
So my friend Tara sends me the application, and she said, this is crazy. Like, you need to apply. And I'm like, I am quite, like, I'm a bougie redneck, okay? Like, I don't know that, like, a pageant is, like, I don't know about this. I'm like, we're going to need some serious coaching to get me on this stage. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. And she's like, we'll figure it out. But she's like, I think you just need to apply. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. So I apply, and I'm thinking they're going to tell me no, be like, you need to do a county pageant first, or, like, do a smaller pageant system. Like, you need, like, this is Miss USA, okay? Like, we got to practice. Oh, no. I get an email a month later, and they're like, hey, you're Miss Westfield. And I'm like, what? I was like, what? I literally screenshot it to my friend Tara, and I'm like, what do I do?
Oh, gosh.
I'm like, this is in June. I have no, like, I know nothing. I'm like, I don't know how to walk. I don't know. I know nothing. So lots of FaceTimes and walking practices. And
wow.
She sent me all her dresses to try on. And
it's interesting how God equips you too. If he wants you to do something right, he will make it happen.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. And so how did that go? Like, do you...
Better than... I honestly feel like... Like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't feel like I was at all equipped or, like, should have made it as far as I did, because I'm like, all the other women that competed were incredible. But I was in the top 15 of 30, which is awesome for my first pageant. I thought that was pretty incredible. And then I was awarded the fan favorite because I forced all my Air Force friends to vote for me.
Love that.
I was like, please vote for me. and then also the difference maker of the year, which I don't know where that came from. I have no idea. I'm assuming it had to do with my involvement with different nonprofits here in Indy, but I honestly have no idea. I was just very shocked. I honestly was just grateful to be there. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, the prelims, I was last because I was Westfield and it went alphabetical. And at the very end of prelims, the MC has a sheet that we filled out for them that was like, hey, these are talking points that you can talk about. Mm-hmm. And so at the very end of prelims, as I was on stage walking, they were reading off, Audra's hero is her husband, Scott, because he died serving our country and all these things. And, like, I get to the end and I'm just, like, standing there and I'm thinking, like, all right, she's going to keep reading or, like, say, like, okay, Miss Westfield. And then it's, like, my cue to leave. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, like, standing there and she goes, I think that deserves a round of applause.
Oh.
So I'm literally standing there and, like, everyone is just honoring Scott and his sacrifice in his life. And I thought to myself, like, that's why I competed. And like, I also competed to show people that like, you don't have to let tragedy define your life forever. Mm. I really wanted to compete to like, not only show myself, but other people that you can still find joy amidst whatever you're going through, and that it doesn't invalidate your grief at all. Like, they can coexist, and that like, if I can go through what I've gone through and still like go do something that's so joyful and fun, like you can do that too. So like that moment, I was like, that was the epitome of what like I wanted to accomplish. And so everything else was just extra.
Wow. And God gave you that gift of like just being there and watching that. Oh, you guys, I'm just like a mess today. This is so powerful. Like, you definitely have like an incredible story, and so powerful. And I really hope that inspires and encourages people out there. Is there any, like, how can we find you? What are the places that we can, I mean, can we book you for speaking in affairs, or what are you doing right now? what do you want to do, first of all? And then how can we find you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, Facebook. I have never been, I guess I've been kind of booked to speak publicly. I've started speaking on a lot of panels, which has been really, really cool. And just getting to share kind of work stuff. I'm a certified financial planner. So a lot of like, hey, the great wealth transfer is loss. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's a financial concept, but it's also people grieving. Wow. So how do we do that? So that's been really cool to get to take what I've gone through and say, hey, this is what your clients are going to be experiencing as they're going through loss. Mm-hmm. This is how you can best serve them. That's been really special. But then also just getting to speak about my faith and be like, hey, Scott dying was not good. It's not okay. But I can still change my purpose through that experience, mm-hmm. Which has been really rewarding. But yeah, I don't know. I guess just yes. Provide you my email. I don't know.
No, that's great. I mean, we'll have all of the links and everything down in the box below if you're watching this from YouTube. If you're on the podcast, then just hop on YouTube so you can find Audra there. And what are some of the nonprofits that are near and dear to your heart that you're involved in, and you can maybe other people can get involved in as well?
So the primary nonprofit that I'm involved in here in Indy is called Brooks Place. Mm-hmm. And it's a nonprofit that helps grieving children and their families. Mm-hmm. So I'm a facilitator on one of their program nights, which has been rewarding. I've gotten to do that the last year and a half. So I just sit with children who have experienced loss in some way or another, whether that be a parent, a sibling, a grandparent, a friend, and just helping them work through all the complicated feelings.
Wow.
And so that they're a phenomenal nonprofit. I also do a little bit with TAPS, so it's the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, which just helps a lot of military friends and family that have experienced loss. And then Folds of Honor is another great nonprofit. Mm. So just a lot of different military nonprofits for sure.
Okay. Is it okay for me to ask you also, like, are you open to dating again? How do you see that? How do you feel about that? Maybe you're very young still, so you have your whole life ahead of you. And how do you feel like Scott would want you to continue your life?
When we got married, there was two Air Force pilots who crashed within about 2 weeks of each other and died. And so Scott and I had a very serious conversation that was, if something were to happen to each of us, what would be our wishes for the other?
Mm.
And in that conversation, Scott said that he would want me to find love again if something ever happened to him, because he would want me to be happy and do whatever made me happiest. And he wouldn't want me to be alone forever. Mm-hmm. And so I do have a boyfriend. I have been dating.
Yay!
And I am grateful that Scott and I had that conversation, because I feel like I have a lot of peace knowing that, like, he doesn't think that I'm betraying him or things like that. Also, as a quick digress, like, I hate when people say move on. Like, I move forward. I don't move on from what's happened. I move forward with it. And so, like, I just feel like Scott gave me the kind of the right to do that in his permission. Own way. But it was, dating was hard, because I did feel very guilty when I first started dating, because I remember I felt like I was betraying Scott, and I thought, man, are other people going to judge me for dating? Mm-hmm. Are other people going to think you know, oh, she doesn't love Scott if she's dating, or, you know, like, oh, that's weird. She still talks about Scott because she has a boyfriend, or I know I shouldn't care what people think, but yes, I do.
But we do. Yes,
I do.
But that kind of ties into my next question too. Like, does your boyfriend, like, is he okay with it? Obviously you're dating him, but it's because a huge part of your work, right, is talking about the tragedy of your life.
Yeah. I think that I have always been just very upfront about the fact that, like, you're going to share my heart forever with Scott. Mm. Like, I'm always going to love him. Like, this is not a you have my full heart forever. That's not what this is. Mm-hmm. Like, I will always love Scott. And some of my widowed friends relate it in a way that made a lot of sense to me, which is where they said, it's kind of like having children. You have one child and you think, how could I love anyone more than I love this child? And then you have a second child and you don't love your first child any less. Mm-hmm. You just somehow have more love for the second. And so my remarried widowed friends describe getting remarried that way, where they're like, I still have all the love that I've ever had for Scott. But then if I get married again, my heart will grow with love for that next person. And so I've relayed that, which I think is helpful. He's very understanding of just, like, it's not my place to tell you what you do to honor Scott. It's not my place to tell you when you post about him. That's like, amazing. It's just like, it's your story, it's your journey, and you have to do what you feel like is best for you. So I think it was a very healthy answer, yes, certainly.
Definitely.
What, but I will say too, that when I think that I had to get to a place in my heart where I told God, I said, you didn't owe me my first husband. You didn't owe me Scott. That was a blessing that if I never get married again, that was more than enough.
Oh, wow.
That blessing was more than enough. And I am young and I would love to be married again, but, like, I am okay if I don't. Mm-hmm. And I am at peace with that, because my first marriage was beautiful and it was incredible. And, like, God didn't even owe me that. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that was more of a blessing than I could have ever imagined. I don't deserve another one. I would love one, but God doesn't owe me that. And so I had to come to peace with the fact that, like, I may never get married again, and that's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. What a beautiful soul you are. Thank you so much, Audra, for being here. I hope you guys are as encouraged by her story as I am. Would you like to close us in prayer?
Yes.
Or is there anything else that you would like to say? Anything at all to people? Or
I hope and pray that people don't invalidate their stories. I've had people that I've met with before that, you know, will say, I can't imagine what you've gone through. And, you know, like, that's just so much worse than what I'm going through. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like, the worst thing that I'd gone through until Scott died was depression and anxiety. And that's not invalidating depression and anxiety at all. Mm-hmm. But, like, that was just the threshold of the worst thing that I'd gone through. I'd never lost a grandparent. I'd never lost a cousin. I'd never lost a friend. Mm-hmm. So my threshold of pain and suffering in my life was low. It was relative to me, but it was low. And so I always encourage people to, like, what you're going through is legitimately hard. What you're going through, regardless of if you think someone else is going through something worse, like, that is still very hard for you. Mm-hmm. And so don't invalidate that. Like a divorce is still grief.
Yes.
Like there are still different versions of losing a dog is, like, there are things that are still very, very hard. Mm-hmm. And, like, yeah, mine was a very public, it was a very tragic, sudden, and, like, yeah, it was really, really terrible. But that doesn't mean that, like, other grief stories are not
loss,
just
a
as
loss
terrible.
Is a loss, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, loss is a loss. And, you know, like, I will also say that, you know, like, find the community of people that make you feel seen and heard. And I cared too much about what people thought about me in my grief. I micromanaged my grief a lot. Wow. I think I didn't really grieve until probably year two, because I just was so worried about, people were like, oh, you're handling this with such grace and strength. And I'm like, well, I don't really have an option.
Yeah.
Because I also have so many eyes of people on me that are expecting me to do that. And so year two was kind of a train wreck, and I had to give myself a lot of grace. So I think just whatever you're walking through, give yourself the grace to do that. And, you know, not micromanage or judge yourself for what you're going through.
Yes. That's great. Okay. Would you like to close us in prayer?
Yes, I would love to. Father God, I just thank you so much for Karina and for giving us this day and this moment. And I pray that everyone that's listening or watching, that whatever they are going through, God, that you give them the friendships and the love and the community to just really feel seen. And if they are the supporting roles in someone's life, that you just equip them with the strength and the words and the knowledge to be the best friend and support and love that they can be. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today, friends. I hope you guys are walking away feeling encouraged and maybe even a little lighter. Make sure to subscribe and drop a comment or review so we can keep this faith-filled community growing. Share this episode if it touched you or if you know someone who needs to hear it. Let's spread the love. I'll see you next week on Karina Faith Diaries. And until then, stay strong, stay kind, and keep the faith.